I'm glad you're here. Thanks for coming. And thanks for returning, those of you that were here the other day. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Lord, once again for this magnificent day, breathe your spirit into us. And at certain points, allow it to be a tornado and kick us along, or a sweet whisper in our ear. But Lord, inspire us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I have two things that I'd like to do with you formally, and then open it up for a sort of free-for-all. What I've discovered any time I've walked into situations where youth ministry conversations are kicked into gear, there is this sort of desire on the presenter's part to get some information out, and then there's this whole host of questions that people want to throw into the mix, and so I want to honor that and not act as the answer man, but as the partner in terms of discovering what some of the issues are and then walking through some of those things. If someone would function as timekeeper, that would be helpful for me, because I'll get to going and what you say will inspire my juices and we'll just keep going even faster. And so my hunch would be to go for about 20 minutes with the two items that I've got, and then we'll spend the rest of the time in process of what you've got, what you've heard, what you're wondering about, and we'll go from there. Can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
20 till call o'clock.
Great.
It's 20 after right now.
But first, a game. Ed and Fred are dead. There is blood and water on the floor. How did they die? I'm only able to answer yes and no to your questions.
Ed and Fred are dead. There's blood and water on the floor.
Were they killed by a person?
No.
Well, they slipped on the floor and cracked their head open. Did they slip on the floor and crack their head open?
No.
Are Ed and Fred people?
No. Play this one.
Are Ed and Fred rocks?
No.
Ed and Fred mice?
Edible.
No.
Are they rats?
No.
Are they ants?
No.
Did they choke to death?
No.
They're a mosquito. Are they mosquitoes?
No. Welcome.
Blood
and water on the floor.
Is the blood and water, is the blood their blood?
Yes.
Is the water their water?
Kind of.
But you said yes or no.
Yes or no.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That doesn't help, does it?
Yeah.
Are Ed and Fred fishes?
They are not fishes.
Is one a fish?
Yes.
Is one a cat?
Yes.
Is the fish Fred?
Sure.
Yes.
Ed killed Fred by trying to eat it. Knocked the ball over. Did Ed knock the ball over?
Yeah.
And then drowned.
Cut, let it death, and then the fish drowned.
Yeah.
Let's go one more. There's a man at home with a mask, and a man coming home to his home won't go home because of the man with a mask.
Once again.
Okay. There's a man at home with a mask. A man is coming to his home and won't go home because of the man with a mask. Why not?
Is the mask that of the man at home?
The man at home is wearing the mask.
But is it his mask?
Yes.
It's his home.
Yeah,
yes.
Is it the other man's?
I'm sorry, it's the other man's home.
Home. Okay.
Okay.
But the man that's coming home.
It's his home.
Is coming to his home, and the man with the mask, it's not his home.
It's not his home.
Correct.
Is there more than one color to the mask?
Yes.
Do the two men know each other?
Yes.
Does the man coming home know that the man with the mask is in his home?
Yes.
That's good. Are they human?
Yes.
Does he know who the man with the mask is?
Yes.
Is he related to the man with the mask?
No.
Does he want to be related to the man with the mask?
No.
Is he angry at the man with the mask?
No.
Is he afraid of the man with the mask?
Yes.
Will the man with the mask hurt him? Physically.
Yes.
Okay. Does the man with the mask have permission to be in the home?
Yes.
From the other man.
Is the man in the mask the landlord?
No.
Is the man with the mask his father?
No.
Did the man coming home give permission for the man with the mask to be in the home?
No.
Is there a crime involved?
No.
Is there passion involved?
Oh, yes.
Is there what?
Passion.
Passion.
Passion. So the man with the mask is on TV presently at the house?
Not at a house. But at home.
But at home he is on TV.
Yes.
The other man's home. On TV.
Mm-hmm. But not at a house.
At home, but not at a house. Mm-hmm.
Is the man's home
big clue.
On TV, home. Inside a building or outside a building? Is it, out, is it outside of a building?
I don't have any clue about what I'm supposed to ask about.
Is the mask made out of plastic?
Partially.
Is the mask made out of fabric?
Parts of it.
Are these people the same person?
No.
I guess we could find out.
They're on different channels.
No.
Does the mask cover the entire face?
Yes.
Did he make the mask?
No.
Did the man coming home make the mask?
No.
Is there anybody else in the home?
Is there anybody else at home? Yes.
Is it the man coming home, is it his wife?
No. There's one other person at home.
Is the home a house?
No.
No, it's not.
No. Has something to do
church.
With the TV.
Is the home the TV?
Is the home a church? No.
Is the home a set?
Set. No. No.
A TV program.
No.
Televangelism.
No. I'm
sorry?
Is the home a physical location?
The home is a physical location, yes.
The home is a place where they sleep?
No.
Does the home have words? Does the mask have words on it?
Yes.
How can a home not be where you sleep?
But it's where they work.
It's where they work, yes. This is their job.
This is their job.
Hi, youth ministry?
Yeah.
Welcome. Come.
This is a riddle. Oh. You can only say yes or no when you ask questions.
Yeah, so.
So we got somebody that works at a TV station and wears a mask.
No.
No.
Is the mask on the virgin man's face?
Yes.
Does the man coming home know what the words are on the mask?
Oh, yes.
And is that what he's afraid of?
No.
So he's actually afraid of the man that is wearing the mask?
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with the mask?
Correct.
Is the man a fish or a cat?
No.
No, they were real human.
We're glad they're humans. Yeah, yeah, these are real humans. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
The man at home. The other person's boss?
Nope.
His rival?
Yes.
It's the Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Does he want something from the other man?
No. Frustration meter's over here. Baseball.
Baseball.
Who had passed our time?
Yeah. Let's do a quick review. On Wednesday evening, what we talked about were the following items. That youth ministry in the life of the parish is non-negotiable. That if you're in the process of call, I'll just kind of go from all over the place real quick. If you're in the process of calling a new clergy to your parish, are they willing to be involved? Do they wish to be involved? Flat out say, this is a non-negotiable in our parish. And if they say, well, I don't do this. If they do baptisms, they do youth ministry, and don't let them off the hook on that one. It's a lifelong journey. Item number two, get passionate about it. Be passionate as you are about young people learning the piano or soccer or any one of those other kind of items, getting good grades, all that stuff. Be passionate to put scripture into their hands. Another one, don't pay someone else to do your work. We know the response at the top of page 125 that says, we welcome you into the Lord's family. We receive you as a fellow member of the body of Christ, a child of the same Heavenly Father, and most importantly, a worker with us in the kingdom of God. So don't pay someone else to have that happen for you. If you do, be ready for the consequences. It will be out of your hands and you've literally given it away and therefore have nothing to say about it. So don't pay someone else to do your work for you. Around this circle, we have enough gifts and enough talents to accomplish youth ministry in any given parish anywhere across the country. Okay? It is ours. How do we get people to do that? We look for their passion, we look for their drive, we look for their gifts, and we plug that together. And wham, youth ministry can occur. Now, I'm not talking about big youth groups. We have a 3,200 member parish. We have a big youth group. We don't even have a youth group. We've got youth ministry happening all over the place. Happens on Monday, it happens on Tuesday, it happens on Wednesday, happens on Sunday morning and in the evening. But do we have a youth group? No, not by the traditional sense. We've got people who are engaged with young people all over the place.
How many is your parish?
3,200.
Wow. He almost chokes on that.
Yeah.
We know three things about young people.
I don't think there's 3,200 Lutherans in
Palestine. We know three things about young people. Critical issues for them are to make a friend, to be a friend, and feel okay about themselves in the process. Now, if we boil that into how we're going to do youth ministry, separate from all of the other stuff that we've ever known, been taught, learned, grew up with, we'd say, well, we could accomplish this. What it might mean is gathering a few young people together and say, we need to bake cookies. For what purpose? Because I've got a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old and they love to eat cookies. Would you help? Youth ministry. Let's talk about faith and life in those places. Who are we? We are baptized members of the family of God, and we are not separate from that. So all that we say and all that we do is acting out the faith.
What are we defining as youth? Are we defining it
from the baptismal font? From the baptismal font to the point of death. And the example used is at the point of any given funeral of grandma or a grandpa is to sit and recognize that we've got grandchildren there and children there and a mom or a dad there and that at the point of baptism, we started this process, and at the point of death, it will end. It spreads the whole way. Okay. Finally, I talked about the other day, most churches still operate under the myth system, and the myth system is simply, if we get a young, energized, usually good-looking, talented, musical, individual who's soon out of college and pay them absolutely nothing and expect them to work horrific hours, a youth ministry can occur. Okay, that's the myth side. And then we talk about foundations. And all of that's written in Raleigh Martinson's book, Effective Youth Ministry, and I didn't bring it with me because somebody borrowed it and nobody gave it back to me. But it's on those sheets. Books that I'd encourage you to read in terms of reshaping congregational effective youth ministry would be Raleigh's book, number one. Number two is right here. It's a huge book. You won't read it in an afternoon, but there's just some fabulous stuff in here that recognize that we need to be changing. And how can we do that effectively, efficiently? Tom Peters, Thriving on Chaos. He does all sorts of snapshots of huge corporations that have simply changed the way they do business so that they'll have a future. The other one for you to read would be A Generation of Seekers. How do we deal with the baby boomers? Baby boomers are coming back to church, but they're not asking the questions that were asked of a generation ago. Baby boomers are asking the following questions. They're not asking religious questions. They're asking spiritual questions. They've tried this system, this system, this system, this system, and it hasn't worked for them. They're looking for something to fill their spirit, and they're coming back to church. How does the church feed them? So Wayne Clark Roof does a fabulous job with that. Usually in youth ministry circles, there's this business of what are the resources? So front and back on that sheet are gobs of resources, and at the end, feel free to take those. A Generation of Seekers, Thriving on Peace, and Effective Youth Ministry. So the flip side of that one, or the other thing I said the other day, is if it's good, steal it. And then make it your own. Don't be bashful. That's how good ministries occur. People grab an idea, develop a mission statement, bang, off they go, and they stole it, and they're running with it. Two things I want to do very quickly. One, theological foundations. The question was read this morning, why is it that young people are so frightfully absent from our parishes? Why is it that we don't see them anymore? I'm going to suggest that for a moment, it has to do with our theological foundation. That if we trued that up a bit and checked our perspective and asked some different questions like, what's the mask? Right? Asking different questions. When is a house not a home? That if we ask some different questions, our young people would be back because there would be a place at the table for them. First, what does God say out of Genesis? I created them male and female. I put my image in them. I breathed it into them. That's all of us. We carry the image of God. We are the image of God. Not just you, not just me, but all people. This isn't just procreation that's going on. This is God's image being dumped out and poured into all of us. How then do we look at young people? Do we see them as simply, that's my child? No. This is the image of God. That's growing up. Perspective check. Do we see them as when they finally learn enough and know enough and grow enough, then up to the communion rail, we'll go with them and say, now you're ready to eat. Or, this is the image of God. And a little three-year-old on the way back from the communion rail saying, hey, how come I didn't get something? And wondering, how come I got left out of the table? This is the image of God. If we looked at our young people from kind of third grade, at least up to that college age, as the image of God, I think some of our ministries and the life of the parish might begin to change. Number two up there is, what does the church say? 1 Peter 2, 9 and 10. Chosen race, royal priesthood, holy nation, God's own people. God's called you into a particular arena to move from darkness into light, Once you were no people, now you're God's people. What does the church say about all that stuff? We work together. You are as much a priest in this family as I am. There are no titles. We're not in a pyramid approach, some hierarchical system. No, 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 no. This is the family of God. We work together on this stuff. Third item on the list, what do youth have to offer? In 1 Corinthians, it talks about one body, many members, and the ear can't say to the eye, I don't have any need of you. When we came to Calvary, one of the things that we just kind of toyed around with, it happened occasionally, but we put children's time kind of sort of back in motion during worship. And it was sort of a profound telling moment from the grandparents in the congregation to say, it's so good to hear young people in church again, little babies crying out. You know, a few months later, they were saying things like, we can't hear anyone because they're being too noisy, but we love the fact that they're there. Sounds are critical. What do youth have to offer? Have great gifts. They have limitless energy. They have new perspective. Their ability to wrestle with and handle change far exceeds anything that, because most of us are, I'm hunching 40-something, maybe, or close. We don't handle change as well as this young person here. And so they've got volumes of gifts, and what does the church usually do with all of those gifts? Simply says, your time will come. So, if we look at young people in the image of God, and recognizing their gifts, and that those gifts have something to offer then, my hunch is young people will find a place at the table. Also, when I mentioned change, and one of the things that Peter's talks about is that the best thing that we can help our congregations do is to saddle up to change and get comfortable with change. I also mentioned with Raleigh's book is 10 years old. It still represents, in the Lutheran family, cutting edge of youth ministry. What does that tell us about how willing we are to change? So, off of what Peter says, cozy up to change, get used to it, and then get reckless in it. Raleigh says, unless you're living at the edge of chaos, you're not living in reality. And that doesn't mean that you need to turn everything upside down all the time. It's that life around us changes rapidly. And meet those changes with equal rapidity. Is that a word? Okay. 10 years ago, sociologists, psychologists, a number of folks were gathered together to say, where are our young people? What stimulus do they respond to? What gets them going? What gets them cranked? Discovered that 10 years ago, here were the things that young people responded to best. They enjoyed being looked at as an individual. They liked having adults who were their buddies. They liked answers to questions. They looked at the product. They liked to be seen in public. And most of the stuff that they were involved in was a public arena thing. They responded to when programs were designed, especially in the church marketplace. Let's design a program and kids will come. If we build it, they'll come. Resting on sort of an old church model of faith only, we could spend some more time on that other stuff. What they're telling us now at the beginning of the 90s is that our young people have changed. That they've made a categorical shift in terms of the stimulus that they respond to, that no longer do we need to look simply at them in order to have effective youth ministry. I could spend a bunch of time on each of these. I want to hit about three of them real quick. The young person comes into youth group pretty cranked out. We spend some time with them. We lock on to them one-on-one. We do some conversation, active listening, boom, boom, boom. And the young person is still lost as they go home. What folks are telling us is that we need to look at the whole system. What's going on at home base? What did they bring with them? Do we know mom and dad? Do we know what's happening in the home front? So when Jose or Mary show up to youth group, we know the dynamic in that place. It causes us to move into that family and into that relationship, so we know them. More than just as an individual unit, we know them inside of a system. Know the system. No longer are young people looking for people our age to be their buddies. Young people hate it when we try to be their friends. And they hate it because we try to be cool. And at 40 years old, I can't be cool anymore. And they'll sniff that out, and then they'll look at us and say, act your age, would you? That's what we expect of you. Real time, real life, act your age. Okay. Act in a way that causes me to look at you as an individual who has an inner compass, a clear direction, a focus, and some passion. So that I can either model or not model and see you as a change agent. We welcome you into the Lord's family. Receive your workers with us. I will teach you how to build this. I will teach you how to listen. You can teach me how to be re-energized. You can teach me some new language. Change agent. The other one I want to talk about for a bit is in regards to program ministry. Most of us are still running out of the old myth that if we design a good program, our young people will come. I had a statistic in my brain real quick, not that statistics matters, but the Baptist Youth Worker Organization met in Atlanta about 4 years ago. And they did a huge survey, and the overwhelming response from their youth workers were, quit publishing programs for us to do, start teaching us how to relate to young people. Now, Lyman Colvin's been doing that for a number of years with the serendipity stuff. This is not new information to us. It's simply a reminder that youth ministry is not a program. It is relational ministry. I need to sit down with you face to face and have a conversation in order for us to move farther in our ability to talk about faith. I had a fabulous conversation over tea this morning. Relational kind of stuff. That will allow us to move down the ladder, down the funnel, to the place where I've got some pains and some hurts, and can I trust you with that information? Will you trust me? Okay. Young people are saying, don't create any more programs. I can go to Disneyland, I can go to Magic Mountain, I can go to all those places. Those are programs. I need some skill at making a friend and being a friend and feeling good about myself in the process. And finally, the one that I think would cause us to wrestle most is a movement from needs-based to grace-based. Now granted, this one's out there a little bit, but bear with me for at least a minute. Old question is, we'll simply gather a group of young people together and ask, what do you want to do? That is death in youth ministry. They will tell you exactly what they want to do, and you'll be right back here. Or you'll be creating a program in order to create relational development. Or you'll be looking at a product. Can we get more kids in our youth group instead of process? Okay. All of those are needs-based mentality. What does our church need to do? What do we want to do? Grace-based. This side of the spectrum is setting. Back to our theological foundation that says young people are incredibly crafted and gifted. They have all of these talents and skills, and what are we doing with them? Do they have a place in the life of the church? Now let's say, suppose, someone comes along and says, I would like very much to go on a service project to New Mexico. Okay. But we look around the room and in our parish and we say, you know, one of the skills, one of the gifts that we're lacking in this parish are a number of people who are really good organizers. We've got a whole bunch of followers, but we don't have many organizers. So the response might come back in grace-based ministry, maybe we can't do that just yet, and it's okay. Young person come along and say, I'd like someone to lead a Bible study. Now, this might be out there. And someone might say, you know, we really don't have anyone gifted in our parish to lead a Bible study. Maybe we can't do that right now. Get where I'm going with that one? That it's okay to say no based on the gifts that you have. Based on the gifts that you have in your parish, kind of pour energy into that stuff, and ministry will come alive. Rather than looking down the road and saying, you know, the Presbyterian church over there, they've got several hundred young people, and if we just modeled our ministry off of their stuff, bang, we have it. No. Your parish is your parish because it's got a certain degree of gifts and grace. Pump that stuff up. Do what you're really good at. It's affirmed by what Peter says. It's affirmed from our theological tradition, and the Lutheran family says, you've been gifted. Use those gifts. Because what happens when we say, you know, I'd really want to be like, and God looks down and says, you're not happy with the gifts I gave you? What's wrong with that? Okay? Use those gifts and crank on those. Make those work for you. Could tell dozens of stories about the ways in which parishes have taken their gifts and just tweaked them a little bit, and electricity happens. Rather than struggling with, we got to do this, and we got to do this, and we got to do this, throw all that conventional stuff out the window. You know, you probably heard the old circle that says, if we have fun stuff, if we have fellowship opportunities, if we have worship opportunities, if we have service opportunities, we'll have youth ministry. Sort of the old wheel that we used to put up there and say, make sure on any given Sunday, if we're going to go with a four Sunday month, here's the fun stuff, here's the fellowship stuff, here's the service stuff, here's the worship stuff. Boom, got it done. Okay? Young people say, that's a pattern. You know, I can pick the three out of the four that I don't want to go to, and I'll show up to the fun stuff. Okay, so, but what kind of, throw that stuff out the window and say, who are our young people? What gifts do they have? And then begin the process of dreaming and designing something for them. And the other thing that I didn't mention down here that I'll mention at this point is that for most of us, we've grown up with youth ministry as also connected to religious education. And where youth ministry is happening currently is we need to adopt a mission evangelism mentality. Because every 3 years, in most of our communities, high school kids start and high school kids end, if you want to look at sort of the high school age. And what we continue to do, the old models we continue to run at, our religious education models are the four Sunday sort of thing, da da da. We haven't moved into the mission evangelism edge that says, let's not assume anything. Let's not assume that these kids sit with their parents at table and pray. Let's sit with our youth group and have a meal and pray at the beginning, and golly, they'll go, geez, you're weird. Well, yeah, this is what it means to be a part of this family of faith. Why do we do this? Conversation occurs. Boom. Now we're talking faith conversation. What stuff hits and what stuff misses for you? How are we on time?
We're 10 after. Okay. 20 minutes.
Okay. So, like, one more time.
I almost hear, I don't know if you read, is it Kim and Callahan's book about church growth and everything, where you claim your strengths,
mm-hmm.
claim your strengths, build on those. It's the same thing. But.
Churches don't like to be in situations where they'll freely confess we can't do that. Because somewhere in the back of our brain we have this mindset that we need to be all things to all people and fit everybody's needs. Well, at some point, parishes need to recognize this is what they're good at. And we can help you find a different parish where your particular gifts will just accelerate. And it's okay to say that. Rather than, okay, now we've got to go find somebody to do this so that they'll stay happy in this parish. And I would much rather spend a whole bunch of time with people who have passion in a particular area rather than going around and trying to drum up people to fill the suggestion box need. Yeah?
I hate to ask this because I wasn't here for the first session, but can you share some of the things that are going on in your church? Have you already probably done that? So.
No, I haven't.
And you don't want to?
Sure, I can share all sorts of stuff. The one part that there you go.
Give us a couple of real successful things.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That was Arizona.
In All right. We'll go with the area of confirmation ministry. That's an area for me that I'm just passionate about. Confirmation at Calvary Lutheran Church starts we'll start this next year, because we're making a shift. We'll start at first grade and finishes at 11th grade. Again, we've thrown out all the old stuff that says, you got to be here 7 weeks in a row in order to develop a relationship and get all this stuff screwed into the brain. And then when we confirm you, boy, you'll have all this Lutheran identity stuff and Bible stuff down cold. And we confirm you, and what do we know happens? Boom, they're gone. So let's develop, on the baptismal covenant, let's develop a relationship with these young people and make it consistent. Even if it's once a year, it's a start. I didn't bring that with me.
When's the first communion?
We're going to start moving that down a little bit with a cluster of people who've done some studying on that. Currently, it's at fifth grade.
Right. Even if when you said you're going to move yours at first through 11th, so they're going to go ahead and start their communion at fifth grade, then
that's about 2 years down the pipe. Again, knowing that parishes don't change instantly. And the worst thing that we can do is say we're going to do this, simply declare it.
As a rule, it's 8th grade, isn't it?
Each parish.
Each parish makes their own decision, right? Really?
Yeah.
Is it still 7th and 8th?
Yeah.
We confirm all baptized Christians, and it's up to the parents if they want their 2-year-old.
Right.
I mean, not confirm, but commune. They still go through confirmation at, you know, whatever age. We have had little kids, and I was giving the story. We've had little kids come up like this, their faces just glowing, and they're so excited to receive that gift, and they're not excommunicated from this group until they've
confessed. No, yeah. At our church, our children go up, but they don't participate in the Eucharist.
My kids, for example, on that one, my kids, when they come to the communion rail, back up a little bit. My kids won't come to the communion rail anymore. My oldest at 9 says, "Dad, I don't get anything when I come, so why should I come up?"
Really?
He said, "Well, you get a blessing." He says, "Big deal. Everybody else gets to eat." So, you know, for at his age, in his heart, in his spirit, he's saying, "Give me the goods."
I'm ready.
Will he understand it? Are there points of time that I don't understand it? Yeah, I think so. And it's part of my responsibility as a parent to talk that through with him, to say, what is this that you're getting up here? What does this mean that we're gathering around? So we start at third grade. We start with basic Bible education in their third grade Sunday school class as a part of the Sunday school program. Calvary buys every kid a kind of a kid's Bible. And then we do an educational. They come for an hour and a half segment when we simply drag them through some big stories in the Bible. The next Saturday is hosted for parents, where we have them write a letter about the importance of reading this stuff. And they sign it, and we Xerox it down, and we glue it into the front cover of the Bible. And then the following Sunday, those kids are invited to come to worship and come with their families. And as a part of the worship service, they come forward. We have sort of a blessing service designed for those kids that come with their parents and get their Bible. And we hand it to their parents and talk through that baptismal covenant that says, here's the point at which you can put scripture into their hand. And we need to go with that. So that's at third grade. Fourth grade, we do some other stuff. Fifth grade, we do communion education. About 4 hours spent with kids over a 2-week period. And then a Saturday event from 8 till 12:30, where they go from station to station to station, tasting everything from cooked lamb to smoked fish to playing the parts of the folks at the Last Supper to looking at all sorts of different kinds of breads. It's a whole educational experience that simply says let's involve their senses and their sight and their brains and then move them in small clusters of people. At sixth grade, we do some more stuff. At seventh, eighth, and ninth grade is the most formal of their education. They come for 2 7-week segments over the course of a year. The front part is sort of faith and life. The second part is sort of the catechism stuff. And we do Old Testament, New Testament, and Lutheran Diana at 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. Each of those grades have their own specific age retreat. Drag them off for a weekend, do some very specific stuff in each of those. At the 10th grade year, they begin Well, actually, they, at the end of the ninth grade year, they're asked to pick a mentor out of the parish. We don't assign it. They pick someone that they can talk God with. In the month of September, we drag the young person and their mentor off for a weekend retreat, do some more stuff with them. Then a whole year is not spent in class, but with their mentor. We've got six packets that we pass out to them. Over the course of the year, accomplish these six packets, or don't accomplish these six packets. Nobody's going to grade them. They're simply conversational tools for you to sit and talk with somebody who's active in faith. And then in the 11th grade year, we have what's called faith expressions, and this is where parents get most nervous. We have one evening where it's their turn to, in front of their peers and families, to express their faith. And they can do that by reading, by poetry, by liturgical dance, by slideshow, by... we had one kid who was kind of the all-city hockey king. And he talked about his faith as he sees it on the ice. And his position is a goalie. And that frequently God takes slap shots at him and says, catch this, I'm sending it your way. He went on for about 6 minutes. It was just fabulous. And so it makes me, parents really nervous because, oh my God, what are my kids going to say? And then the next day is affirmation of baptism. I'd like to move sort of the confirming part of that way, way down. You know, stir up in them is the confirmation prayer. Let's not wait till they get to their 11th grade year to pray that prayer over their head. Stir them up, you know. Stir them up at this point, Lord, so we got some brewing going on all the way through. But I'm messing around with tradition, too. That's a snapshot.
Now you say you're going to start being starting at first grade through 11th. What would you do in first grade?
Well, we've got a group of parents, men and women who are thinking that if they get a jump start at that age, of even talking about Jesus' story with their kids, they'll be ahead of the game. Mm-hmm. They'll at least know the name and know some of the timeline based on how do young people learn at that age and what are they able to comprehend. We've got to go to the psychologists and the sociologists and say, who are these little bodies and how do they operate? Okay, let's match something up with them. And maybe it's nothing, I don't know. It'll be just wild to see what they dream up. But we have a delightful time sitting and imagining with that group what could happen.
I just had to say something about, you just said kids should be stirred up younger. I agree with that, and I had kind of an example of something that happened. Some people from my church and I, we came up to the Holden Weekend in May, and a friend of mine, he's always been like, he'll say this in Sunday school, as soon as I'm old enough, I'm out of here. I'm never going to come back, and I'm not, this doesn't interest me, and we have these big talks about it, and we came up here, and he was one of the leaders, one of the group leaders, and so his energy and his talents were kind of tapped in that, and he became really excited. He came back, and the whole way home, he was talking, we can do this, and we can do that, and we got back, and we had a sleepover, which he helped to plan, and he got up, it was like almost midnight, and we were all sitting around in the sanctuary. He must have talked for, I don't know, half an hour or more, just we have to do this, and let's get a group, and he was just really excited. And I think that's what happens when you find the person's talent. And they, I think a lot of times people my age, they go to church and, you know, they're kind of looked on as teenagers. And teenagers don't like to do anything. And you know, maybe they're not, they don't feel included.
You have popcorn? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Great story. Great image. In our parish too, maybe some of yours as well, there's this image of we have to accomplish things, especially in confirmation. We have to learn, we have to memorize, we have to, you know. And then it's in essence graded or we look at progress, we have these progress reports. Our young people do the worship notes. We've got memorization, and so. And then this last, 2 years ago, we sort of dismissed, there was an individual who kept track of all of the worship notes that all the young people, so we needed, you know, how many do they have to accomplish in order to complete this particular task? And over a 52-week year, when we arrived 4 years ago, it was, if you get 10 done, you're in good shape. So we sent out a note, a clear signal right off the bat, and we said, we'd like you to be able to accomplish 48 worship notes. Oh, the parent response was, my God, you want us to be in worship every week? Yeah, pretty much.
My sister just went through that with her son in camp here in the other part of the state, but it just was a horrible, horrible commitment. It was just horrifying. Mm-hmm. And he had it would have been a lot more palatable had there been another option like, 2 years or every other Sunday or...
Yeah.
The church doesn't make it that much.
It was...
So we sent out this message to Zed a whole bunch. and then the word also got out that nobody's keeping track. I mean, so why are we doing this? Well, if nobody's keeping track, then, and it's not a necessity that I stand up and give my memorization work because nobody's keeping track of that. And really nobody's keeping roll of who's in confirmation class and who's not. And pretty soon a couple of parents said, well, Scott, what are you gonna do when on affirmation of baptism Sunday, up walks Anders Norsteban, who has not been there for 3 years and says, I'm ready to be confirmed. And I said, what an opportunity to stand over the head of that child and say, and stir up in this one, who's not been around for 3 years, who's at the place to say, I'm ready to be stirred up. Now, hopefully, we have a conversation with Anders all the way along the line and put hands on his head and say, well, but what a great image for the church to move from needs-based, you've got to accomplish this to get confirmed, to grace-based. I'd like you here. I want to be in a relationship with you. I want to struggle with you and walk with you as you're going through this journey. But in terms of your accomplishment of all of this stuff, I'd rather be in a relationship with you than look through the list and say, you've not filled out any worship response forms, therefore you cannot be confirmed. They'll be gone. I didn't meet the requirements, so I guess my church is based on requirement needs. No, I don't want to be there. I'd rather be at the grace end of the spectrum to say, Anders, I've got a relationship with you. What are you brewing? What are you thinking? What are you talking about? Who are you hanging out with? Why is church no fun for you? Why aren't you here? Where can we do to meet you where you need to be? Those sorts of questions. Involvement. Well, that's high risk stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I think that that teenagers or, you know, kids enjoy being treated like individuals. And I also think with the buddy thing, I still think that's a good idea. I enjoy people coming up and talking to me because, especially with two services, and we go to the early one, there aren't always a lot of people my age at that one. And so I kind of feel alone sometimes. I think as long as, you know, you said people try to act cool and stuff. Yeah, that's kind of funny. I think you need to think about it like, how do you act around adults? And I think people my age enjoy that, you know, being talked to in that way.
Under the category of honoring you as a young person and understanding who they are as an adult, and then finding common ground in which to meet, yeah. But in terms of me sitting down with you and saying, this is jamming stuff we're doing here.
Just something just struck me when you were talking about the difference between the grace-based and the having them. How do we as Lutherans divorce ourselves from the works righteousness of saying you got to do this and this and this and this, and go, you know, I mean, we say we are grace through faith, But then here over here, we ask them to affirm themselves through works.
Yeah, don't you find them, the individuals of these children, I mean, being different? I mean, in other words, some of them need more structure.
Sure.
So, I mean, in other words,
it's a relationship.
Yeah.
I know that Kyle, my 9-year-old, is really going to need some focused energy. I also know that Nathan is going to be a quick study, and he'll just get it.
Right.
And we'll be zooming with him. You know? So is there a relationship so that I know how you work so that I can meet you where you are?
Yeah,
and we're going on a ride.
Yeah. A lot of kids need to be pushed. I mean, some kids don't. I mean, they'll go on their own, but a lot of kids, if there's an easy way out, guess what?
And
they're going to take that easy way out.
And I'm going to contend that they've learned that. That's a learned behavior by watching mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then parents need to be pushed.
Right.
We really pump some parents in terms of this one, the one woman who really pressed back in terms of meeting the requirements. I said, you know, kind of it was an ugly last straw. I said, fine. I'll tell you what, on a weekly basis, Jeannie, I'll deliver to you the 50 worship response forms per grade. That's 150 worship response forms for you to evaluate, to make sure they got something of merit on the page, and then you check it off on the list. Well, I don't want to do that. Find somebody else to do that. No, I don't want to find anybody else to monitor how my faith is growing. I want to be in a relationship with you that says, let's talk about this stuff, rather than, okay, they met it, check it off, boom, boom, boom. Do kids, how do kids learn? How do they operate? And we know they're great manipulators and all of this stuff. And we got one kid who's just this great skateboard artist. And I can find him 3/4 of the day over at the Kmart, because there's a couple of rails on which he skates, and it's just fabulous to watch him. And so I know that that's where I can find Paul. Even if he's not there on Sunday, when I go cruising through Kmart, Paul's there. Paul sees me, and his guilt meter goes off, and I see Paul, and my guilt meter goes off to say, have I chatted with Paul lately? So there have been a couple of rainy days where I'll just kind of sit and watch, and Paul will come over and say, what are you doing here? Watching you. What for? Come on. I was never able to do that riding a skateboard. So how do you do that? He says, well, what are you doing here? You know, he's still curious. Am I ever going to ask the question? You haven't been in confirmation. I'm thinking the whole time, Scott, don't ask that question. So, but just a hope to get the word for people to say, hey, how are you? Recognition, who you are, where you work, who he is, what he does, and honor that. Yeah.
What about if one of the kids in his confirmation class contacts him? We've missed you. Is that an okay question for them to ask?
They respond to peer pressure.
Do you ever do like a shepherding between the kids? Keep an eye on each other.
Maybe somebody else has. I've not. And if somebody else has got a great story on that one, throw it into the mix.
Well, we've at our church, it didn't really work out we had this big planning meeting thing, and all the kids came, and an adult got up, and we wrote down all the suggestions of what we want to do, and then the paper just sat there, and nothing really happened, nobody planned anything, and finally, I mean, we've had the kids, I mean, we've been doing it, me and a couple of and we call people, and we talk with them, and they feel maybe, I mean, I'm one of the older, probably the oldest in the youth group, and I think the younger kids especially like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, older people coming out and talking with them.
Yeah, youth ministry calling trees in order to kind of wiggle the chain a little bit and say, you who, we missed you, sort of stuff. Another place where youth ministry can kick into high gear is being present where young people are. There are a whole host of youth workers out there who have this sort of odd notion that they need to be in their office and doing the work of the church in that place. And then you kind of come along and say, your place is to be where they are. You mean I can call it legitimate ministry when I go watch a volleyball game? Yes. Because the young person's going to look and say, what are they doing here? Send them a note. Boy, you played well. It's just a delight to watch that gift be used. Thanks. Sign your name, send it. They'll get this, they'll go. I never received anything like this before. Who's doing this? Somebody in the life of the church. Yeah.
You know, I sit on a, for the school district, the Future Directions Committee and the Curriculum Committee. And it's interesting because you look at all this, and this is really what the school district is going through. And the paradigm shift has really become an abused term.
Yes.
In the process, but we talk about the seven intelligences, and people learn different ways.
Yes.
We've piloted one whole school that is, it's an open enrollment school that is strictly the seven intelligences.
Mm.
You look at...
Can I come over?
Well, that now is they are starting to incorporate that throughout the district, through the other four elementary schools. But everything that they're looking at is interdisciplinary and team efforts.
Gifts.
I mean, they're not saying, what's one plus one? But they're saying, how do I solve this situation?
There's a term for that. What's that education? It's like end product education or something.
Outcome-based.
Outcome-based. There we go. Okay.
And the middle school is, we have last year over 80 groups came in from all over the United States to see the middle school. So, I mean, you have to think that what they're doing in the environment every day, 9 months out of the year, and we're also dealing with a Sesame Street generation. It came up being very stimulated, very creatively taught. As opposed to one plus one is two,
right?
You know,
it's a whole different environment, and it has to overlap into their religious upbringing. Because if we don't, they're going to go, Jesus, this is boring.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I'm Catholic, although we go to Lutheran church, and so first off, one other disparate comment is, I mean, we got First Communion in first grade, and I mean, it was a very difficult adjustment for me to start going to the Lutheran church because. When we first started going, it was once a month. I'm going. I mean, that's a very integral part of my faith. And, you know, it's amazing what you learn. And your comment this morning about, I don't know that I know any more at 37 than I did in first grade. You know, it's, which may be a scary thought, but, you know, I think we need to get them included a lot more. Mm-hmm. Than we did, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. And I think we need to parallel what they're doing.
In terms of communion, I think young kids have such a capacity for wrestling with mystery that at an adult level, we try to rationalize and sort of organize and compartmentalize. And here's little Nathan who fully understands that the dream he had last night is real. And he talks about it most of the day. And it's wonderful mystery. What will happen if we say, this is Jesus in your hands? Well, there'd be an endless discussion of what Jesus in my hands and eating this is all about. I'd love him to be able to be at that point. We happen to belong to a parish who, you know, does it in fifth grade. So one of my passionate points is to continue to kind of poke along a little bit and say, let's do some education, let's do some modeling, let's do some places where we can move it down.